As soon as you create like a new segment or a new product out of your, so say that you would do a lightweight product or a, say that you wanted something that you could use login online and you start uploading lists and start sending emails, for example, which would be a very lightweight product. What you're doing is that you're segregating your portfolio of customers. And I obsessed about that stuff when we had 5 customers. So it was not something that came when we had a lot of operators using us. It was already when we had like 4 or 5 partners. I was just, no, we cannot let that happen because we need all of our teams to work as one unit toward one goal.
This podcast is brought to you by Pragmatic Solutions, the leading iGaming PAM platform with a modular approach, including many benefits like a fast, secure, and scalable API-based platform integrated with all major third-party products and services. Make sure you head over to Pragmatic Solutions and join our smart thinking.
This podcast is brought to you by Pragmatic Play, a leading game developer providing player favorites to the most successful brands across the industry. With an award-winning multi-product portfolio of slots, live casino, bingo, virtual sports, and more, Pragmatic Play is powering up new possibilities of play through one single API. Visit pragmaticplay.com and discover your favorite every time.
All right, Simon.
We are here together again. You are one of the most recurring podcast guests. Did you know that?
I had no idea.
Yeah. I'm always very happy. It could be something with you. We are literally neighbors here, of course, and we obviously known each other for a long time. And I just mentioned that the bag that you have here, it inspired me when you came into the office to Betsson many, many, many years ago. This was 12 years ago when I saw you for the first time in your impeccable style and incredible leather bag that later inspired me to buy my bag that I still have to this day.
That was a very different time, yeah. I was very dressing very differently back then.
I love it. So Simon, since then, obviously, we used to sit next to each other at Betsson back in the day in the poker team. We were a small part of that company, but we were very effective, I would say. And since then, obviously, we've grown to new heights. And Simon, you obviously built an incredible company in Fast Track since then, over the last couple of years. And I would love to take the opportunity today to talk a little bit about the learnings that you've experienced and that you've gone through by building such a well-organized and well-maintained company that obviously has done incredibly well and is positioned for further growth into the future. So as a starting point to that, I wanted to just ask you about the founding story of Fast Track and what challenges you faced in the early days.
Wow, okay. So that takes us back in 2016. So we had Fast Track got incorporated, funnily enough, on the February 29th.
Ah, right.
Which is exact. So it's like
leap year. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like a kind of fun fact. That's like a thing.
So you celebrated 2 years today, this year, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it, right? And it's been 8 years, so it's quite a lot of time. The founding story, I think it's quite interesting. We're 3 co-founders in Fast Track. So it's myself, it's Chris, and it's Hans. And I think all of us have been in iGaming since, pretty much our entire careers. My kind of beginning started with kind of in Malta with Betfair in the Santa Vener office over Lidl. I was there for a number of years. And then I had a short sort of time in Barcelona. Then I came down and started working for Betsson, where we met each other. And it was kind of during the Betsson days when all of our different paths converged in one way or another. Chris started working in the poker team, so he was quite quickly working together with me in one way or another. Hans, I actually met on a was an HR director at the time, Erica Harrison. She was organizing she was organizing a Gozo farmhouse. I just started a Betsson. I think it was a couple of weeks or a couple of months into the job, and she organized this thing in Gozo. It was quite fun. And that's when I met Hans. So Hans came from nowhere. And he's also been kind of involved in Betsson from a technology standpoint in various different ways. and we hit it off. I think we were gambling with like these plastic ice cubes in the indoor pool.
It was like crazy times
until,
back then.
Until like 5 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
And it was a really good time. So we found each other. And then, when it came to the founding story of Fast Track, I've always been the most determined in knowing from very, very early times that I'm going to have my own company one day. But it was never an agreed, I never said to myself, okay, this has to happen on a specific timeline. As long as I was learning and working for inspirational and cool people and, you know, in a good environment, I felt really motivated. And I had that both in Betfair and in Betsson. So it was very easy for me to continue working because I felt like I was learning so much every day. And then when I think it finally came after it was almost 4 years with Betsson, and the time was right essentially to go and do something else. And I think something that had bothered me for quite a long time in the operator landscape, which I've been living in, was, you know, inefficiencies in various different ways. It felt like a lot of organizations were really struggled with getting shit done, if you want to put it like that. And that was always my strength. So it doesn't really matter in which environment you put me in. I think I found my way to kind of get stuff done. Like, and I think that's something that followed me. And we felt when I left Betsson, there was a time Fast Track didn't exist as an idea at the time. There was just an ambition to start a business. So I was actually pitching ideas to Chris and Hans on quite frequently during the time when I was not in Betsson anymore, but I determined to do something. And we landed on this one idea, which was around helping land-based casinos come online. I think I want to back up a bit. The purpose of the business was always about finding an edge in the layer of efficiency. So like, could we find a commercial advantage or a commercial opportunity within providing a better way to work, right? So providing a better way to operationally structure an operation would allow us to find a commercial sort of gain within that. Then we were looking, that was quite clear from the beginning, but then it was about looking at, okay, what are the different problems that we could help solve? We got quite intrigued and everyone got very much on board about this idea around, there was a lot of casinos starting at the time everywhere, white label casinos all over the place. It was very easy, it was very accessible because you could go to a platform and you could become a white label in a matter of, you know, a few weeks or a month. And we wanted to sort of take advantage of that opportunity. And land-based online was something that clicked at first. But then when we started speaking to iGaming Cloud at the time, because we needed a platform and we looked at the platforms, and at the time we felt that iGaming Cloud was the best one because they had a live data feed. And a live data feed would allow Fast Track to build technology on top of the platform without having a dependency on the platform. So if there was a strong tech stack, essentially a strong live data feed and a strong API layer, then it would allow someone like us to be very independent in this. So that was very important in this aspect. So we actually reached out to iGaming Cloud and said, like, listen, we have this idea and we would be interested in working with you. But I don't remember exactly how everything unfolded, but very quickly there was like kind of another mutual interest from their perspective as well, that they didn't want to build front ends. So you look at it like as a scalable business, you want to focus at what you're doing. So if you're a platform, you want to sign more operators and you want the operator to take care of the integration and do that, because then that means you can increase your volumes. And I think most of the platforms in the market at the time, doesn't matter who you looked at, but the same was for iGaming Cloud. A lot of the operators came with the condition that you'd build them a front end, right? So you had to provide them with a casino site in order for them to go live. And it was like a means to an end in the sense of getting an operator live, but I don't think any of the platforms, including iGaming Cloud at the time, had any ambition to like really do that. So when we came along, they kind of steered us towards like, listen, you have no idea how many people are trying to get online. You don't need to worry about the land-based thing. You know, like we got people you could speak to potentially and help them. So at this time, I think Fast Track was looked at as like, oh, they're like a front-end company.
Yeah, right.
That was not at all what we were, but we didn't really care because we were like sort of it doesn't matter what people think at the moment, because when we talk to operators, we are going to explain that, no, we're going to be a growth partner. And what we meant by that is we take the experience from Ikris and Hans, from technology, operations, commercials, and building a casino. And we are marrying that with a an operator that is starting up and that has an idea, a brand vision, and ideally funding and an idea on how they're going to bring in players. And in that way, we could, in sorts, incubate them. We could provide kind of all of those means to get it done. So we were super involved in everyone that was launching on in a fast track partnership. We were involved in everything from the product strategy to what we're building as a gamification layer, what the front end is going to look like, how we're going to do the CRM, what the go to market and bonus strategy was like. This was kind of where we provided value. A lot of people from the outside looking in, they were like, they develop front ends. No. That was a piece of it. We delivered a front end and the experience towards the player, but it was wider than that. We went live with, I don't know, 7-8 casinos in the first 2 years. Quite exciting. We really loved, we had this principle that, very early founding principle in the company, that we believe that differentiation is quite key, that we are not doing like a Shopify of casinos here. We are like building very, very unique concepts, and we want to attach a very unique brand profile and an experience that goes with that. So we've always believed in that really strongly. So we also attached ourselves to people who were starting casinos who had that ambition. And, you know, amongst those, there was like Casino Calzone, which was like a, you know, a pizza branded casino. Really cool. We had Ikibu. Ikibu was a really like this alternative island casino, really cool. Metal casino. There was a couple of different ones, right?
Classic.
And I think we loved that when there was a story behind it. There was something that we could deliver more than just sending free spins to people, but actually tell a story and bring them on board of an experience on the site and doing all of those things. And we did that. But then after a couple of years, we were quite quickly making money in Fast Track. Fast Track was founded by the three of us, and we put our own money into doing that. So we never, or for the first couple of years, we didn't take in any external funding. We very quickly sort of started making money, and we made sure that was the case. And then we grew with the revenue that we generated from the operators we were working with. And that was great, because that meant that we obviously could retain control and equity and, like, you know, control our own destiny in terms of where we were going. And I think it was in early 2017, there was a lot of fuss around UKGC and that they were kind of relaunching in a way the whole regulation. And then we were faced with, I'm sure you remember, it was all the reality checks, it was like sort of deposit limits, it was player controls, it was not showing childish content when you were logged out, it was about controlling what your affiliate is promoting, how the bonuses are structured, which bonus mechanics you can use, CRM campaigns, how they were communicated, that you have terms and conditions in the right place. It was like a very, very sort of rigid and comprehensive sort of regulatory overhaul, if you may. And most of the operators in the landscape at the time, I think they were faced with this, like, oh, you know, there's so much technical work getting like on board with Drake. And that's been like a leading theme for a lot of years, I think, in terms of regulatory landscape, and is certainly a big thing in the US at the moment, going to market and like the work that it takes to go to market. It wasn't an issue for us. I think Fast Track has always been a tech company, first and foremost, before anything else. And we've never really been having an issue with getting stuff done quickly from a tech perspective and meeting those type of things. But we did see another issue, and that was like we started questioning towards the mid of 2017, we started questioning the viability of the white label model. And that turned out to be a very good read. As we are looking back, now we have, you can look at the papers and you see like, okay, good. Yeah. We acted on that. Because so essentially how the conversation went, and when you're a small company, this is not a big process. It's not like we called for, you know, oh, let's do a conference. You know, no. Okay. It was a coffee break at the office. We're sitting in tower.
We changed this direction of the whole organization.
Yeah. And it was like kind of, you know, we sat in one of the meeting rooms. It was like, this is not going to work. right? It's like you got the white labels, they're already paying everyone for everything, right? And now you're introducing two other aspects, which is the taxes of the regulation, which is very important. It goes straight on the bottom line. And then the next thing, which is the ability to be in control of what you're doing. I mean, that was beyond anything else, was the most important aspect. What bonuses are you doing? Like, and how are you attracting customers to your brand? And how aggressive can you be, really?
Yeah.
And then you have to ask for permission by whomever is holding the platform, like all the time, about what you can do. And they don't want to take any risk, because if they are taking risk, they're having the license, right? So they're going to have to take all the penalties in case something goes wrong. You're not very competitive. I mean, you're not competing on the same terms as everyone else in the market. And we kind of made a read in the market that, yeah, regulation is going to go, you know, it's quite a widespread thing. And it touched pretty much every market where we were prominent at the time. Mature markets where player appreciated these like unique brand concepts. You know, it was Sweden, UK, Germany, Norway, Finland, like all sorts of stuff. So that's like in a brief moment, I think we had that conversation. Yeah. And I think everyone knew the gravity of the words that were spoken in that meeting. But we very quickly, it's just like, well, everyone is loving what we're doing from a CRM perspective. Like, we knew that everyone has been like, ask the groups and networks that we were hanging around with. They were all like kind of quite impressed with what we were doing from a CRM perspective. And we built this internal platform, the one that is done today called Fast Track CRM that we are licensing. Was exactly the same platform we used internally. So that was used for our own teams to manage the operational sort of aspect of the casinos that we were operating. And we managed to achieve like such an incredible amount of efficiency in that. We automated everything and we were doing 240, 250 campaigns a month, which were across five different languages on like five, six different brands. And we were managing that with like three people. So we knew the power of what we managed to do there. And a lot of people were curious from outside in getting access to that. So we said like, well, let's change this, like pivot Fast Track. Let's start licensing the CRM software as a priority instead and scale that, because that's more scalable. So there was a couple of providers in the market, they were like kind of integrating themselves to the operator. And then they had other ones. And I was really impressed with Red Tiger very early on, because what they did was that they created a really strong integration portal where the operator integrates, you know, sort of Red Tiger in this particular case back in the days, according, you know, sort of to a very clear structure. So as long as you do it yourself, right? So we had exactly the same principle. Like, we don't do integrations. Like, we build the best integration layer in the universe, which makes operators able to integrate with us.
Yes. The IKEA of integrations, if you will.
Maybe. But what it helped you do is that you're not going to be bogged down doing integrations, because then you can focus on scalability. The only thing you need is kind of provide them with the documentation and guidance that they need, and that's much more scalable. So that was something we put in from the beginning. Another thing was like, we had a lot of principles which I took with me from product days and stuff, and like stuff like that, which is around how we build product. So there was a lot of talks at times we had meetings about, or maybe considered at the times, like, okay, should we have a free trial product? Should we have like something that is more, this might have come a little bit later actually, Pierre, but you know, should you have a lightweight product that is more similar to something like a simple email tool, because some people just want the simple stuff, or do you want to do, and this is one of the situations where a core principle is writing that no, we have to provide Fast Track as one solution to all of them, right? So there is no modules, there is no choice in this. It's like align with our vision in terms of where we're heading with the product, and then we're all going to be fighting at this, you know, towards the same goal. We got operators and partners and everyone is just going in one direction. As soon as you create like a new segment or a new product out of your, so say that you would do a lightweight product, or that you wanted something that you could use login online and you start uploading lists and start sending emails, for example, which would be a very lightweight product. What you're doing is that you're segregating your portfolio of customers. And I obsessed about that stuff when we had five customers. So it was not something that came when we had a lot of operators using us. It was already when we had like four or five partners. I was just, no, we cannot let that happen, because we need all of our teams to work as one unit toward one goal. So to this day, Fast Track has not been sort of lost that focus, and I think that's crucial in doing these things. Now I lost track of what you're talking about.
Fantastic, Simon. It's fascinating to listen to, and I really like the fact that you talk about the kind of being process driven and principle driven in building your organization, because that also, I suppose, is a way to get the whole company aligned on one common goal. Because sometimes in organizations it can be hard to know what are you actually working towards. But if you have that blueprint, I suppose it becomes just so much easier. And then, you know, to that point, so you experience this like incredible amount of leads that you generated through ICE, and now you need to scale the business, right? What challenges did you face now when you start scaling business in order to cater to these customers? And how important at that time was it to keep those principles in mind? And also, you know, when you scale a business, all of a sudden processes changes. You know, the processes you came up with last week are now no longer relevant anymore. What challenges did you face during that period?
There was a people, there is a capacity related challenge that we obviously didn't have enough people to be able to do the work that was coming in. But so that was one big challenge that we were up against. So we obviously needed to recruit. And when you're not that well known in an industry, or like if you're in Malta and you're a bit smaller company, you might be quite challenged by finding people, whether it be developers or anything like that. But we had the advantage that we had this other business that we were pivoting off, so to say. So we could, the more demand we had on the CRM, we could kind of use the assistance of the rest of the team to help with these different things. Setting up, scaling the organization in 2019, I mean, it was very much about, we needed to get rid of ourselves being dependent in the process, right? I mean, that, okay, is it me and Chris that are closing deals, or is it actually a team that is closing deals? And getting to that point quite quickly was quite crucial. So we brought in kind of the first salespeople, and we started building an integrations team, and we started building a partner team. Very flat organization, but that was kind of the first thing that we needed to do, and we needed to start rubbing off and teaching these guys how to do all of these different things. And in many ways, we had to create ways of navigating that, because we didn't obviously know what that would look like. But again, we were very guided by our principles, and we were obsessing around the service that we would deliver. So we were constantly having a common goal that it's not, the process is a means to an end, right? And that everyone has that reflection as well, is that we are trying to achieve this, you know, a world-class experience to our partners. You know, this is the process that seems like that's going to do the job, and that we are then implementing that and following up whether that's actually having the outcome. But we've never been married to a process unless it's been working.
Yeah. Obviously, we have our company very close to our heart, and especially in the beginning, the founder is involved in everything, right? Mm. In order to understand a company and to get it to grow. But at some point you have to start to delegate, and otherwise you become the bottleneck. Yeah. And many founders, I think including myself, definitely struggle with the idea of letting go. And it's always a constant reminder, and it's always trying to be brave to let things go, kind of thing. Is that something that you struggled with as well, or is it something that you still continue to struggle with? How do you view that part? Was it scary to start letting departments and tasks and so on go?
I think the honest truth is that I don't feel I've ever had an issue with it. I think everyone around me has felt that I'm not doing it quickly enough. All right. So I think my own perception has been that, no, I'm doing it. I am letting go when I'm ready to let go, and when I feel that the people around me are ready to take it on. And I've been very conscious about when I feel that the teams are ready to do these different things. At the same time, I've had very clear feedback from the people around me that, is this happening quickly enough? Are we doing it? So this has definitely been something that I've been reflecting on a lot. Mm. But to this day, I feel, you know, as the organization has evolved over time, we used to be involved in every single deal, every single detail, every single feature request, every single user story. And I like this idea of organically navigating off things, and I feel perfectly fine with the fact that I am going to be, that some things are going to take time. And I'm kind of more, and it's also a little bit aligned with what I think is fun, right? So as we were like growing the company, I think there was like a natural evolution of that people were growing in their respective roles and they took a little bit more. And once I managed to get rid of kind of one, what do you call it? Like operationally, something that took a lot of time out of my time, that was a regular frequent process that was happening all the time. I felt that that was always easy for me to prioritize, to get that someone else equipped in order to do that and be able to empower them fully in doing that every day. And that happened, I think, in various different places, in various different paces as well. Like it took longer for some teams and longer. But if you look at, like, for example, product sat with me in Fast Track for until pretty much like 1.5 years ago. I would say that I was incredibly involved in product. And, you know, there was people, there was individuals, in particular Linus, who's in the company now, is my head of product now. He was growing so fast in his role and his capacity that naturally he was taking over more and more and more. And now I completely trust Linus in running the product for me. And I'm involved at a completely different level, but I'm not going into a workshop on specific requirements unless it's like a very specific thing that is happening. Otherwise, the teams are completely self-sufficient in this. When HR, for example, me and Chris, we were very like for being very, very HR-y, like in terms of like we cared a lot about people. I think from the very beginning when people came into Fast Track and we had this idea about how we're supposed to kind of look at performance in individuals and what we are expecting from individuals and how we should treat people that are not performing and, like, you know, all of these different things. So we were super involved in that process. And I think, you know, when I brought in Jenny, for example, who's my chief people officer, who is absolutely phenomenal in this space, I've reflected on that a little bit. And you know, it took her very long time to get on board, like onboarded into Fast Track in the way she could feel autonomy in her role and be empowered to do her job because it was so close to me, right, in terms of how we are perceived, how employees are being managed, specific situations, you know, if they're complaining about that, how do we act? But she managed to navigate that over kind of a 2-year period, something like that. And I think you need to let it take time sometimes, and it's okay. Like, you can't let it stress you that it takes time. You have to just invest time. Just because the time is what it is, it's like you can't just let go for that reason. If you want to really build culture, you need to like kind of, you need to see that, oh, it's happening by itself now. Like and she managed to build, like, you know, these policies and building up this framework and putting everything up in a way which now has embedded that into, there is kind of, the culture is governed now as well by other, you know, whether it be how we do recruitment or onboarding, performance evaluations, you know, how we do in case we have an issue, in case someone is asking for a salary increase. Like, everything is documented. Everything is documented now pretty much in terms of how the policies work. And the rest of it is guided by these principles. So every document would also have the guiding principle at the top of the document. This is what I mean a little bit with the purpose, that everything has that purpose. And that's what I want to see. I don't, you know, Jenny is going to work out a document together with her team, which would, for example, say this is how we treat salary changes or automatic salary increases in Fast Track on a yearly basis. Okay, good. And then it has all of these processes and stuff like that. But there would be some guiding principle on top of that, which is governing what goes into that document, which means that it's a living document. It's something that can change, because if there is a good idea coming even from an employee or from anyone else, it can make its way into it, right? By governing it through, this is the idea. This is what we're trying to create here, right? And this is the process that we put in place that we believe is going to reflect that the best way. I don't like to get married to those things. I like to feel that the principle is the most important, and as long as the policies are doing that. So yeah, it takes time, and my learning has been that I'm probably more confident in that now than I were previously. That is fine.
Yeah.
It just has to take time, and I'm gonna let it take time. And if anyone asks me or challenges me on it, it's just like, this is how it is. It's gonna have to take time. And yet to this day, we're still having. There are certain things that are close to me, which are getting into that place right now. For example, marketing and brand and stuff like that has been one of the last pieces, you know, finance and things like that as well. So there are, but we're like almost there in every area now. And that allows you to then accelerate and keep a completely new pace, because then you can look at new exciting projects and stuff like that. But I have chose to prioritize culture over results in that sense. So I've just said that, okay, I'd rather get it right before we let go. And if it takes a little bit longer, it takes a little bit longer.
Yeah. And then obviously results will follow after that.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, yes. So, you know, obviously you built Fast Track by being principle driven. Let's say you talked about that you created a vision for the company and then kind of principles under those visions that you need to follow. Like, how would you recommend the companies to go through that process to find out their vision and then set these kind of principles under that vision? And how do you then permeate that to the rest of the team? You know, it's easy to have that in a document, but how do you actually permeate it?
It's like, I'm so driven, and I'm programmed in a way that I can't do anything without purpose. And people who are similar to me get completely demotivated unless they can attach themselves to something, right? So for me, it's been, I don't even, you know, I can't even go into a meeting as it is right now. And if I don't understand the purpose, I can't let go. Like, it's like that, you know, it keeps going. It's just like, no, we need another meeting. It's just, I need to understand how this, now I know how it connects to everything. So for me, it's very important. I couldn't do anything in Fast Track until we had that established between us. I felt that was very crucial. You have to spend time, and you have to ask the big questions. We had it very early on, but I think I'm just trying to look back in how we looked at it. I mean, everything started from a core value. So I think if you rip Fast Track apart, you find this thing in the bottom, which is that we are just passionately driven by finding better ways of doing things. Like, and then we built around that. So I think every single layer that you're introducing, try to be, I mean, if you find something that you can dig really deep and involve the people that are truly like influential and is going to be. Because if the leadership is not practicing what you're talking about, it's not going to mean anything. So it needs to be whomever those individuals are that needs to establish this, whether it be the founders or whether the board has appointed a leadership team and a CEO. I think it's inevitable that you need to use that person as the core in terms of like creating a team and identifying the people who needs to go through this exercise of identifying it. We involve the entire organization to a degree, but it's when it comes to like the core of the function, it comes back to the shareholders, I think, by the end of the day. Like, you have to talk about what is it that we're trying to achieve and why do we believe it's, you know, what makes us different and stand out? What gives us purpose here? What are we trying to do? Try to formulate that, like try to stick at that level for as long as you can, until you can put it down into a sentence, like something that you feel really good, that your stomach is feeling good about when you're doing this and sort of formalizing it. What we did was that we had this core value. Then we have our vision, which is partly vision mission-ish. And then we have a promise underneath the vision, which works incredibly well. So we have kind of, there is always a better way. That's the core. And then we have the vision, which is digitalize the iGaming industry and deliver the first self-learning engagement platform. In order to be able to put that sentence together, you need to truly like sort of agree as a team that this is what we're doing. You know, like we're not going to be distracted by anything else. This is the focus. And then we have the promise, and the promise are those three things that I told you previously, which are, okay, how are we going to do it? What is the way we're going to approach digitalization? And you know, how do we structure the strategy around that? And those three promises was excellence, flexibility, and efficiency. And then we go into our growth strategy. So on the back of that, we said, okay, what do we believe in? what do we believe builds a good company? And in the growth strategy, we have five different pillars. The first one being that we believe that we need to be a world-class employer to attract the best people. We need to build a world-class product and become an iGaming essential. And what we meant by becoming an iGaming essential was that we wanted to be such a good product that we are the fridge in the kitchen. Like we wanted to be something that is, we wanted to build something that is that strong from a product perspective, that it's not just a feature, it's like an entire solution that solves that problem. Then we wanted to deliver a world-class experience to our partners. So we wanted to differentiate through the layer of service and experience in that sense. We then felt that marketing will do its own. Once you've done those things, the only thing you do is to share your success stories and be a thought leader. So you wanna, since we wanted to be doing things that has never been done before, we wanted to educate, and we wanted to create, educate about an idea that we represented. And then we wanted to show that operators that have aligned ourselves and tried this are successful, right? So that would be the main marketing message. And then we had the fifth pillar of growth, which was introducing one game-changing product in the market per year. And again, like big words, and we put it down. And I've seen this exercise is so important. Like we did the same together with the Greco team when we sort of went into the joint venture with Greco in terms of capturing that. And I think this is when you start creating value proposition, right? You really start to identify, okay, this is how we're going to differentiate, and this is what makes sense for us and doesn't make sense for others. So it takes time. You have to let it take time. And it's important that it doesn't become like culture. For me is something, you know, it means so much to me. And I think we went into this exercise as in, we don't want to just put some words on the wall and then, you know, that take doesn't mean anything. Yeah. And it just becomes this like, no, it needs to mean something. In Fast Track's case, we were happy with the culture. We just didn't know how to explain it. So we did it in the reverse. So in our case, it was about speaking to people in Fast Track. And we had long workshops about, okay, how do we explain these things? And then we arrived at six different kind of values that fed into the core culture of value around what we're doing. And how we do things. And then that became our way, as we call it. So I don't know, we've done, we typically started on like workshop format, throw together, you know, we used a Miro, and then we had that sort of starting at the very core, and then navigating in between everything pretty much as one exercise, because everything needs to make sense together, right? So that it's like, and it needs to resonate very deeply with the people who really care, and then it can be really effective.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of consultants that can help with this as well, and I don't think that's a bad route. I think it's like whatever, but talking is the most important. You have to open up the conversation and dare to talk about it.
Yeah,
and it feels also, you know, that you as the founder are living out this these principles, and the foundation in the company, as you point out, is not just words on a board that is that are looking good and that makes you feel good, but it's also you as an individual who every day comes into the meeting and kind of like reminds people, if you will, or like exuberates that energy to the team of the principles that you have. It seems like it's important to have someone at the top as well who can really, really absorb these values in order for them to have meaning in the company. Again, you can create like the best values in the world, but if they are forgotten and if they aren't known amongst the team, it doesn't matter at the end, right?
Yeah, no, but it is entirely like that. I mean, you can. That's the most crucial aspect of everything. Is that. Like even before they're written down, like you have culture, you're always going to have culture.
Yeah.
And it's so important to us in terms of how, what we believe in terms of how we should be behaving and how we should be tackling problems and how we should be looking at growth and self-growth and all of these different things. And we are kind of reiterating and communicating that in every single sort of place we can. I think that's like, that's the most important thing that I'm bringing when I'm coming into. I have my meetings every week. I have my integration meeting, my partner management meeting or partner success meeting, which is like when we look at the partners, and the sales meeting. And then I have my leadership alignment meeting and stuff, but those happens every week. And by the end of the week, we always have a weekly Friday business update where I'm like kind of just sharing a piece of everything that is going on. And in every one of those meetings, like what I look for more than anything else is the attitude in the room, right? How are we speaking about our partners? How are we approaching problems? How are we like talking about things? Because I, and then when needed, you know, I go in and I guide on those things. And after a while you get into a motion of like, oh, okay, it's programmed, you know, like, and then you can step out of it, right? But that's kind of a very important function of the leadership, is not only to energize, but also to provide that guidance and being a, govern the culture, right? I think it's like if someone would speak up, you know, if someone would go up to a water cooler inside Fast Track and say something bad about a partner, I would go ape nuts. Like, it's not like I would go straight up. It's just like, what are you talking about? Like, this is, you know, the way you think and the way you speak about your partners, even behind closed doors, is what is actually going to define us, right? This is not what we do. That would be like something that we would nip in the bud straight away in Fast Track. There's a lot of soft values here. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a personality type, but it's really important, right? Because if you want to keep that culture intact and thriving, the ability to give tough love is essential to that, right? And if you have individuals in the organization who is not able to take on board feedback for what it is, which is a good thing, obviously you want your staff to improve, and you know, everyone wants to kind of grow together, then that person is not the right fit for the company, essentially.
Yeah, no, you have to have people who are aligned with your culture. So the better you are at explaining what your culture look like and being in practical terms what you can do on that, the more you're going to gain. I mean, we, and it's a bit different in Fast Track, I've noticed that no one else seems to be doing this, but this is a little bit of a hack. I mean, we have, me and Jenny are involved in every single, before we hire any candidates in Fast Track. There is no one hiring without meeting Jenny and meeting myself. And I don't think we're going to let go on that, like, for a very long time to come. This is like the first checkpoint, right? And honestly, we are learning so much in that, right? Because we're part of the process. And then we see like, okay, we started recruiting. Let's say that we're adding 5-6 people a month in Fast Track right now. So obviously I have a few interviews every month, but it's not as many as you think. Yeah. Because, you know, 95% of the candidates that comes to me, they're going to be hired. Because it's very, very rare cases where I'm coming into a meeting and it's just like, oh, hold on. What is this person doing here? Because that should have already been caught earlier on in the process, right? But it gives a sense of quality, like a gatekeeper a little bit, that you make sure that we are not making any trade-offs. We are not, you know, from that perspective. And it happens sometimes that you get like someone put in front of me, or in Jenny meets much more people than I do because she's before me. And she does a lot of that culture piece. But when they come to me, for example, then it's like 95% of those interviews is just me. I can see straight away that this is a first Fast Track person. Someone else has already technically sort of qualified the person for the job. And this is just me about learning about this person a little bit. Gives me a chance to see what to look out for, what that person is interested about, you know, stuff like that. But then ultimately I can hype the person up about joining Fast Track, and not that many candidates get to meet the CEO in a recruitment process. For me, it was never something I reflected on, but it was something people are telling me that, right? This recruitment process, so many steps, but I'm so happy about it because every step is just making me more excited about joining. And that's how you should feel as a candidate, right? And then you're coming at the end of the line. If you have the rare case of, okay, I have you know, this doesn't seem to be the right person, that is cause for reflection. It's like, how did we end up? What are we thinking? Where are we not aligned? And creating those type of mechanics, I think, is important so that you have, as a leadership, you have visibility about what's going on. You need to be in touch with like kind of how your employees are feeling and how your partners are feeling. And you need to create like the feedback mechanism that you feel at peace of mind that you have that. that you know, and if you don't, then implement it, like whatever the control measures are, whether it be coming in on some sales meetings, for example, to, or if you're viewing recordings, or if you are like doing something to in the recruitment process, like we're doing, for example. We have MPS that we're doing on a 90-day rolling basis. We have internally, we got pulse surveys, and we got Great Place to Work, and we got like loads of different measures that gives us additional data and supporting data about how things are feeling. And I feel like I know. I feel like I really know, and I invest a lot of time in that. So like I know the name of everyone who's working in the company right now, and I, you know, it's gonna be a sad day when I don't anymore, yeah. Which is gonna be a day that comes. But I will certainly try my very, very best to stay, you know, to be connected in that sense until that day comes. And now it's a little bit more difficult than it was previously to know how everyone is feeling. That's like the first thing that is maybe, but I know how the groups are feeling. So I know, I feel still in tune that I can, now, you know, I could talk about a specific team, and I could know about the dynamics and the things that they have as challenges, and it would be 95% accurate. Like I don't know specifically about a personal emotion, maybe in one of the individuals, as much as I did previously. This is the first like kind of layer of like kind of, I guess, a growth pain in a sense, because you're getting more people in. It's very difficult to have that level of conversation with that many people. But we're creating, then we're introducing new mechanism that allows us to get the feedback that we need. So obviously my leadership team they are expected to have that, and they are expected to be on top of that and how people are feeling and all of these different things, so that they can assume the role that I once had.
Yeah. How do you think about accountability within the team? So, you know, many employees will have very clear-cut goals that they need to hit, and it's very easy to measure, whereas other positions are much more difficult to measure success in. But not only to measure success within individuals, but actually getting them to a point where they feel like they are accountable to the work that they do.
Mm. I think it's very important to have very clear goals in general. I think what is quite unique about Fast Track is that we have never had, for example, sales quotas on sales teams. We've never had revenue-based targets for the teams. We have had revenue targets as a company, but it's more of it's more been laid out in terms of, we believe we're going to get here if we do this sort of thing. But I've always believed in, you need to give people metrics and be account and only metrics that they can truly assume accountability over. So in my and this probably varies a little bit in different organizations, but in Fast Track we don't, like I take this example of sales quotas. We measure win rates. So everyone is being held accountable to the win rate that they're having. So they know if they're not winning enough deals. And that's like, that works for us. That might not work for everyone, but I feel that is something that they are in control of.
So the win rate is the amount of accounts that they close, not necessarily the
it's the percentage. It's the percentage of accounts of deals that are coming in that are assigned to them that they manage to close by the
end. All right. So let's say they get 10 leads. They need to close X amount of percent in order to
reach that. So again, now you're talking about purpose. And the purpose is that we believe that every operator has the same value to us. Like obviously commercially they have different value, but in terms of our relationship and how we want to service them the same way with the same level of standard, regardless of who they are. And then if you would have quota-based sales teams that are chasing a revenue target at the end of the quarter, that could be good, but then they're going to prioritize getting the deal done that is a bigger deal. And that might not necessarily be in the best interest of everyone. I mean, it could be. But I want to get every operator, right? So I want to make sure that... And I think it's much more constructive to work with the win rate.
Mm. What would you say? So, final question for you today, Simon. If you look forward now into the future, where do you see Fast Track in 3 years' time?
I think the outlook is very, very good for us at the moment. We have had to pull back on the amount of marketing we're doing this year because we have too much to handle. So that's a really good problem to have, but we're having a lot of like these exciting expansion things. Actually, coming back to your previous question, I think we underestimated the challenge of being in different time zones as a company and like scaling that's quite difficult. But now we're getting a hang of that, like sort of as we're going, we're learning. But that is like, you're looking at the 3-year horizon. Fast Track is going to be, the outlook is that we're going to do really, really well. We are, we signed, I don't know, 30 operators the last quarter, I think. So it was like an incredible momentum at the moment. And we're getting better and better at our core processes and what we're doing. So I think we're going to be an undisputed leader in the player game, in the entire player engagement ecosystem by 3 years from now. And I think I'm quite confident about that we're going to be quite a big player in this sense. And I think we're going to be facing challenges that are very exciting. I look forward to as we're growing big. We're going to be a company that is having offices in many, many places all over the world, catering for, you know, field offices targeting different regions. I'm hoping that we're going to be maybe close to, I don't know, at that time, 800,000 operators maybe on Fast Track, I'm hoping.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, something like that. Give or take.
I like it, Simon. Well, thank you so much. It's been great to follow the journey so far from the very beginning, Simon, and I'm very excited to see in 3 years' time when we sit here if these targets are met.
Yeah, let's see it. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.